compliment when a girl tells you that you're almost too good on ice skates. I don't know that that's a compliment. Anyway, that was date number two. Date number three, we went to the State Fair of Texas together. We did that sky coaster together. I was scared out of my mind when they raised us up. I was so scared that I just involuntarily started singing out loud. I will never forget, I started singing Beautiful Day by U2. We were up there, I was like, it's a beautiful day, sky. And then they dropped us, and I was like, holy Shiite Muslim, you know, because Christian cussing is cool, you know, that's what you do. You use words that sound like you're cussing, but you're really not. So anyway, I was really edgy that way. And so that was our that was our third date. Fourth date, we went to a haunted house because it was around Halloween. Fifth date, we went to a Maverick game. Sixth date, we went to a U2 concert. Some of y'all have heard this story before, but we went to the U2 concert on the sixth date, and that's when we had what I call, what many people call, the DTR. If you're not familiar with what a DTR is, it stands for what? Very nice. Define the relationship. I knew that Catherine and I were going to have a conversation at some point during the evening where I wanted to get my feelings for out on the table. I just didn't know when I was going to do it. Sure enough, in the middle of the concert, U2 concert, Catherine needed to go to the bathroom, so I decided to go with her, not to the bathroom, but, you know, I walked with her. I finished before she did, just because it's science. And then I was standing in the breezeway that goes back to our seats. Now, I'll never forget, U2 was playing a song called Sunday, Bloody Sunday. It sounds romantic, right? It's actually about people dying. But anyway, U2 was playing this song, Sunday, Bloody Sunday, and I just sensed that it was go time, all right? And so while U2 was playing Sunday, Bloody Sunday, Catherine comes out of the bathroom. We begin to walk up the breezeway, and I stopped her, and I said, hey, I need to tell you something. This is exactly how it went. She said, okay, and I said, I like you. She said, I like you too. And I was like, I like you too, but do you like me too? She's like, I like you too. I was like, you too, me too. Okay, great. And that was it. That's all that was said. We went back to our seats and we stood there awkwardly next to each other because now the feelings were out on the table and we didn't know what to do or say. But it was a glorious evening. After that, we dated for 8.5 more months and then we got engaged. That brings you up to speed of what happened from the time we started to what I told you last week. Now, here's the thing. When I think back upon my dating relationship with Catherine, we have some incredible memories. We really do. We have some incredible memories from the time that we dated. And when I look back upon our relationship, for the most part, I look at our dating relationship and I'm able to say, I'm glad we dated like that. But then when I think about some of the relationships I was in prior to Catherine, when I think about what those relationships were like, I'm not filled with joy. I'm kind of filled with regret. And I don't look back upon those relationships and think, I'm glad I dated like that. I look back and I think, what was I thinking? Not about dating that specific girl, but about dating that specific girl that way. See, dating can be extremely powerful, and we said this last week. A dating relationship can either make your year or ruin it. It can either warm your heart or it can break it. A dating relationship can either fill you with joy or it can leave you empty in regret. If you've ever been in a dating relationship before, I just want you to think back on that relationship. When you think back on that relationship, do you think back on it with joy or with regret? When you think about that relationship, do you look back and do you say, I'm glad we dated like that? Or do you look back and say, oh, what was I thinking? I would imagine that there's plenty of people here who might share some of the same regret that I do when I think back upon my previous dating relationships. Now, here's the good news. The good news is this. The grace of God is sufficient enough to cover over any of your mistakes. That's the beauty of the gospel. that Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection did something so powerful that even you and even me can experience forgiveness for the places we've been and the things that we've done that we know are not honoring and pleasing to God. His grace is sufficient to cover over all of that. So not one person in here needs to carry any more guilt and shame for a second longer for anything you did in any relationship in the past. But the question that you need to answer is this: how are you going to date moving forward? How are you going to date from this day forward? The good news is this: the Song of Solomon gives us some incredible guidance when it comes to dating relationships. I want you to think about this. What if in the next dating relationship you're in, whether it ends in a breakup or an engagement, what if you're able to look back on that dating relationship and say, I'm glad I dated like that? If you have a Bible, I want you to turn with me to the Song of Solomon. If you don't know where it is, if you can find Psalms, it goes like this: Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Song of Solomon, we're going to be starting in verse 9. I said this earlier tonight, but Song of Solomon is God's instruction manual to us on how to experience the most amount of joy and peace in life when it comes to finding love, making love, and maintaining love. This is a book that shows a man and a woman go through these three stages of a relationship. Last week and this week, we're looking at the finding love stage. And what we're going to see is everything we're going to see about this couple is pre-marriage. So we can take it for us, pre-marriage is dating. So we can take their relationship and we can begin to apply it to our lives. And it gives us some incredible instruction on dating well. So here we go. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 9 says this. And this is good stuff. The guy speaks first, and here's what he says. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Isn't that good stuff, guys? Write that down. That's your new pickup line. You go find a girl. Baby, you remind me of a horse. Just throw that out. She gets offended. You just say, hey, baby, I'm just trying to be biblical. Song of Solomon, chapter 1, verse 9. You're a horse. I compare you, my love, to a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. Listen to what Solomon is saying. He's saying, baby, you are like a horse, but you're not like any horse. You're like a mare. Here's what you need to know. Stallions pulled chariots. And there's this incident recorded in Egyptian literature where Egypt goes to war and the enemy releases a mare into the battlefields to throw Pharaoh's chariots, their stallions, into chaos. So now listen to what Solomon's saying. He's saying, baby, you are like a mare among Pharaoh's chariots. He's saying, when you come around, you throw my life into a beautiful chaos. I can't think straight around you. I can't concentrate around you. I can't even do my work around you. You make me want to ditch all the other stallions. All the stallions are saying, stallions before mares. And I'm like, I don't even care. It doesn't rhyme like some of the sayings that we have, but he's saying, baby, you throw my life into a beautiful chaos. Now, here's what I love about this verse. Look back at it. Verse 9, look at how Solomon starts it out. He says, I compare you, my love. Some translations say, I compare you, my darling. The Hebrew word that has been translated here, my love or my darling, it actually means friend or companion. So listen to what Solomon's saying. You know why this girl throws Solomon into beautiful chaos? It's not because Solomon thinks she's hot, even though he does think that. It's not because Solomon can't wait to get to the making love stage of the relationship, although he can't wait. It's because this woman provides him with a unique companionship. She offers him such compatibility that he just can't get over it. I want you to think about this. The point of dating is to find the person that you're going to marry. Some of you guys will disagree with me on that, but that's the point of dating. The point of dating is to find the man or woman that you're going to marry. The man or woman that you marry is the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with. That's the person that you're going to wake up next to for the next 50 or 60 years. That's the person that you're going to eat all of your meals with for the next 50 or 60 years. It's the person you're going to spend your weekends with and go on vacation with and spend your holidays with. That's the person that you're going to raise kids with. That's the person who's going to be there to comfort you when you're hurting. That's the main person who's going to potentially encourage you to walk with the Lord for the next 50 or 60 years. You know what that means? It means I don't care if your hands fit nicely together when you hold hands and do the interlock. I don't care if you're a perfect fit when you're cuddling. I don't care if you guys are complimentary when you kiss. You better find someone that you enjoy being around because you're going to spend a lot of time with them. There better be a compatibility that fuels a companionship that leads to love. Let me just give you some things to think about. If you're dating someone, ask yourself this question. Are we compatible spiritually? Guys, if you love Jesus, does the girl you're dating, does she love Jesus? I'm not asking if she goes to church. I'm not asking if she doesn't drink. I'm asking, does she have a similar affection to Jesus Christ as you? I don't remember who said it, but I love this kind of example or this image. If you're running full speed toward Jesus, you look to your right or left, and whoever you see kind of running at a similar speed in the same direction, those people might be the most spiritually compatible to you. Guys, there is nothing more captivating than a woman talking about God. My wife, just this past week, she was telling me about how she's been praying for our boys. And here's what she said. She said, I've been praying that our boys would grow up to be mighty men of God. And it was just the way that mighty men of God rolled off her tongue. It just got me. I was like, baby, you're a horse. I mean, that's good stuff. I mean, she just roped me in that minute because there's nothing more captivating than a woman talking about the Lord. Are you guys spiritually compatible? What about this? Are you compatible when it comes to humor? Here's what I mean. Can you guys laugh together? This might sound petty, but I'll tell you what. I tell people, I believe that Jesus and laughter can save and sustain a marriage. I guarantee you. I tell guys this. I say, if you find a girl who loves Jesus and you can laugh with her, you should probably lock that up. Because that says so much. If you can laugh with her, that means you can be yourself around her. I firmly believe, and again, I said I'm going to talk about my wife a lot. I firmly believe she's the funniest girl on the face of this earth. She's incredibly witty. I mean, she's just sharp. And I try and be witty, but we get into these duels where we try and outwit each other. And my favorite nights are the times where we are laying in bed at night just trying to outwit each other, and it always ends with us gasping for air because we're laughing so hard. And in those moments, you know what my thought is? I cannot believe I get to be married to this girl. Why? Because she provides me with a companionship that is overwhelming. Are you guys compatible when it comes to your passions? Are you compatible when it comes to your desires and your interests? Yeah, I get it. I understand that opposites attract. I get that. And it's a beautiful thing when opposites can kind of complement each other. But if you have nothing in common, you have nothing in common. You better find someone where there's compatibility that leads to companionship that fuels love. That's just the way it goes. Look at how it continues on. Now we're going to see the girls' friends chime in. You remember the group of girls last week? Here's what we said. If you weren't here last week, wherever there's a guy and a girl dating, there's always a group of the girls' closest friends nearby. They're always there, lurking in the shadows behind a closed door, in pajamas with ice cream, waiting to debrief. That's how it goes. Here we go. Verse 10, your cheeks are lovely with ornaments, your neck with strings of jewels. And then they chime in. They say, we will make for you ornaments of gold studded with silver. Here's what they're saying. They're saying, hey, we want to help this girl be more beautiful physically for Solomon. And I don't have to explain that. Girls, you get that. That's what you do. You like to help each other look prettier for guys. Let me just fill the guys in here. You need to know what goes into, well, you need to know the process girls go through just for the first date with you. Here's how it goes down. Guys, you ask a girl out. If she says yes, once you leave her, get off the phone. Wherever that girl is at that moment, she just yells out, ladies, assemble! And all of her closest friends, no matter where they are in the globe, they arrive within 30 seconds. She fills them in on what has just happened, that you asked her out. They make some high-pitched noises. And then the first question that always gets asked is what? Do you have any idea what you're going to wear? The automatic response is, I don't have anything to wear. And they go to work. The girls get busy. Guys, you need to know, especially for a first date, the majority of what that girl is wearing, she does not own. It's a one roommate's dress, one roommate's shoes, and one roommate's earrings or jewelry. That's how it goes. But girls, you get it. You enjoy making each other look more attractive for a guy. But girls, let me tell you what's incredibly beautiful. What's beautiful is when your closest friends are committed not to just making you look more beautiful physically, but they're committed to making you look more beautiful emotionally and spiritually as you date and prepare for marriage. And this isn't just for the girls. I mean, this is for guys and girls together. You need to know, if you're a believer in Jesus Christ, it is your responsibility and privilege to help prepare, help shape your closest friends into the men and women that God wants them to be in a dating relationship and in marriage. One of my favorite stories in the entire Bible is the story of Lazarus. Lazarus was a guy who was dead. He was in a tomb. Jesus shows up, calls out to Lazarus, and he says, Lazarus, come out. Lazarus, who was dead, breath fills his lungs, and he steps out of the tomb. But he, even though he's alive, he still looks dead. He's wrapped in dead man's cloth. Jesus looks at the people standing around, and he says, you unbind him. He gives a group of people the privilege of unwrapping Lazarus so that he begins to look more and more alive and less dead. And that's the privilege he gives to each one of us, to step into each other's lives and to help each other by unwrapping the areas of life that still look dead. Think about it. Your roommates are going to be someone's lifetime roommate. Is there anything that you can do to help prepare them emotionally and spiritually to be the best roommate possible in marriage? What would it look like, guys, for you to talk to some of your roommates and just say, hey, how are you doing walking consistently with the Lord? Are you experiencing consistency? Because if not, why don't we help each other step into a rhythm? What would it look like for you to love some of your roommates enough to just say, hey, I just want to be honest with you, and I say this in a loving way, but there's times where I feel like you're mad at me and I haven't done anything wrong. That's the polite way of saying you're moody. What would it look like for you to say, you know what, sometimes, and again, I say this in the most loving way, but I feel like I have to walk on eggshells around you And I know you don't want to be making me feel that way. So what's going on? What would it look like for you to say, you know what, when we're angry with each other, you shut down. You step away from the conflict and you avoid it and you just let time pass until we're just kind of both over it. I would rather us resolve it. I'd rather have the opportunity to tell you I'm sorry and to hear you ask my forgiveness as well. What's going on? Why do you shut down? Why do you withdraw? What would it look like, guys, for you to say to one of your close friends, hey, I just want to lovingly tell you, there's times where I hear you say things that aren't true. I hear you exaggerate or stretch the truth. I just want to encourage you and charge you to be a man who speaks words of truth. What would it look like for you to say, dude, you're a filthy individual. It's time to get up, clean yourself, clean your clothes, and clean your space. What would it look like for you to love someone enough to say that? I just want to give you a vision. What if on your wedding day, you're able to turn around and look at either your groomsmen or your bridesmaids, and you're able to look and point to each one of them and say, God used that guy in my life to help me to be a man of integrity when it comes to the words I speak. That woman was used by God to help me grow when it comes to conflict resolution. God used that man to help me step into a consistent rhythm walking with the Lord. That girl was used by God to help shape me into a woman of security, one who believes in who God has made me to be. That's the responsibility and the privilege God has given us to help unwrap each other's lives. The text goes on. Look at what it says. Verse 12. It says, while the king was on his couch, my nard gave forth its fragrance. My beloved is to me a sachet of myrrh that lies between my breasts. My beloved is to me a cluster of henna blossoms in the vineyards of Engedi. Women would wear these sacks of myrrh or perfume around their necks at night, and the entire next day they would smell of a sweet fragrance. You know what the woman's saying? She's saying, Solomon is like one of those bags of perfume around my neck. Solomon makes me smell good. She then says, he is to me like henna blossoms from Engedi. Henna blossoms were worn by women as ornaments. She's saying Solomon is like an ornament that makes me beautiful. His presence in my life makes me beautiful. Think about what she's saying, guys. When you choose to date a girl, what will her life look and smell like from being around you? Guys, we talked about it last week. We talked about this idea of what do you smell like? We asked the question, do you smell as if you've been around Jesus? We talked about, do you smell of compromise or conviction? Now what we're seeing in the text right now is that when you choose to date someone, you don't have to just worry about how you smell. You have to worry about how the girl is going to smell from being around your smell. Guys, when you convince your girlfriend that it's okay for you guys to spend the night with each other as long as nothing happens, when you walk out on Saturday or Sunday morning and your neighbors or your roommates see the two of you together, how is she going to smell? It doesn't matter what happened. She's going to smell of compromise. When your roommates see you guys behind your closed door in your room at 11, 12, 1 in the morning, I don't care if you're not doing anything. How's that girl going to smell? She's going to smell of compromise. You go to a party and you dance up on her like you've been listening to too much Drake. How is she going to smell to the other people who are there that night? She's going to smell of compromise. We hear you, Lord. You are with us. Think about it, guys. When you let stupid, petty drama into your relationship, when you find yourself arguing about stupid things, drama, every single week, how is she going to begin to smell to her friends and to her family? Because you know she's talking to them about it. She's going to reek of drama. Guys, when you're emotionally flaky, when you tell a girl one day that you like her, but then the next day you're just not sure, when you'll make out with her one moment, but then you'll avoid her the next, when you tell her that you want to date her, but then you just say, I might want to see other people, you're emotionally flaky, you know what she begins to reek of? She begins to reek of insecurity. Guys, you need to know, one of the most beautiful things that God gives you the privilege to do is to help a woman smell of Jesus. When you smell like Jesus, it begins to rub off on her. She begins to smell of Jesus. When you smell of compromise, she's going to smell of compromise. When you smell of conviction, she will begin to smell of conviction. Just think about it. When you set good physical boundaries, you know what she begins to smell like to her roommates? She begins to smell of purity. You know what happens when you're clear, when you communicate your feelings to her clearly and continuously? You know what she begins to smell of? She smells of security. When you refuse the drama, when you're quick to apologize, when you're quick to just bring peace to the argument, you know what she begins to smell like? She begins to smell of peace. You know what happens, guys, when you reject apathy, you reject laziness, and you begin to be intentional with her, and you pursue her, you take her on creative dates, and you engage with her in deep and meaningful conversation, she begins to smell of joy. She ultimately begins to smell of Jesus because you smell like Jesus. Guys, let's just be clear. When you choose to date a girl, here's what you're saying. You're saying, I would be okay with this girl if she began to smell like me. I would be okay with this girl starting to smell like me. Guys, what would it look like for the next relationship you're in? What would it look like for you to leave the girl smelling better than when you found her? Even if the relationship ends in a breakup, what if at the end of that she could look back and say, yes, the breakup was hard. It was heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking because dating this guy helped me smell more like Jesus. What would it look like for you to leave a girl better than you found her? Let's keep moving. Verse 15 and 16, behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are doves. She responds, behold, you are beautiful, my beloved. Truly delightful. What you see here is physical attraction. It's awesome, though, that we don't see physical attraction pop up till verses 15 and 16. You know why? Because that's not the most important thing. It is a thing, and it needs to be there. It's just not the thing. Physical attraction is important. I think it's been given to us by God. It is a thing. It's just not the thing. She goes on. Listen to what she's saying. She's saying, our couch is green. The beams of our house are cedar. Our rafters are pine. You know what she's saying? She's saying, we're having a picnic. We're outside. Our couch is green. She's saying, we're sitting on grass. She says, the beams of our house are cedar. Our rafters are pine. She's talking about the trees that are hanging over them. You see them sitting out, enjoying each other in the light. We're going to get into physical boundaries later, but let me just give you a rule to live by. The more daylight your relationship sees, I promise you, the better it will be. The more daylight your relationship sees, the better it will be. I promise you, live by that rule, and you will not be disappointed. If you think about it, the majority of people in here who look back on a previous relationship and think, what was I thinking? I guarantee you it's because of compromising decisions you made late at night in some dark room somewhere. The more daylight your relationship sees, the better. Now we hear the girl say this, verse 1 of chapter 2. She says, I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. Here's what she's saying. She's talking about flowers that are very common in the countryside. She's saying, I'm very common in comparison to Solomon, who's king. There's nothing special about me. There's 100 other girls just like me. I'm nothing special. She's expressing some insecurity, and Solomon immediately fires back in verse 2. Listen to what he says. She just said, I'm a lily of the valleys. And he says, as a lily among the brambles, so is my love among the young women. He's saying, you're not a lily among lilies. You're a lily among thorns. You are a one of a kind. There is no one like you. There's no one else that I want to direct my time, energy, affection, and attention toward. You are it. Guys, you need to know that when you date a girl, something in her will continuously question how you truly feel about her. I think that this isn't every girl, but many girls are wired at their core to ask the question, am I loved? And so she will want to know, am I truly valued? Am I truly cherished by this guy? And so you will need to repeatedly affirm how you truly feel about her. You just will. Because when you don't, insecurity, when she is left to wonder, she will begin to wander into insecurity. That's what happens. When you leave her to wonder, she will wander into insecurity. Guys, I want to challenge you from your first date with a girl to the last date with that girl. You communicate clearly and continuously so that she never has to wonder how you truly feel about her. Let me just get real practical on what this looks like. You know that a first date exists to determine if you want there to be a second date. Did you hear what I just said? A first date exists to determine if you want there to be a second date. A first date doesn't exist to determine if you want to marry the person. A first date exists to determine if you want there to be a second date. Guys, you take a girl out. You enjoy it. You get to a point where you realize that you really do want there to be a date too. That when you drop her off at the door, you walk her to the door and you tell her what you're thinking. You tell her this. You say, I had a really great time tonight. I would love to take you out again. If she says, that sounds great, then you have 48 hours. 48 hours to call her and set up the next date. You know why? You wait a week, you wait 2 weeks to call her up. After day three, what does she begin to do? She begins to wonder and then wander into insecurity. Has he changed his mind? Has he changed the way that he truly feels? No, you call her up, you take her out. If you have a good second date, you want a third, you do the same thing over again. If you get to a point where you're ready to make things official, don't just assume that she gets it. Don't make out with her and say, well, surely she knows now, like it's official. You want her to be your girlfriend? Man, I sound like we're in middle school, but you want her to be your girlfriend, then you tell her. You say those words, and it absolutely will be awkward. There's no, like, sweet way to say, you want to be my girlfriend? Like, I mean, how do you say it in a captivating way? It'll be awkward. I told Catherine I wanted her to be my girlfriend in the animated movie Chicken Little. It was not my proudest moment, but it got the job done. Guys, you get to a point where you're clear that you're ready to end the relationship. I want you to hear me. I want every guy looking at me right now, please do not miss this. Man, if you get to a point where you're clear that you're ready to end the relationship, then you do it. You call her up, you meet with her face to face, and you end the relationship. Please don't. Start this process of making her swim in insecurity by avoiding her and then not calling her and not texting her and not and being really aloof. Don't do that. Don't make her wander into insecurity to where she gets fed up to the point where she has to come to you and say, what's up? No, if you're man enough to get in a relationship, then you got to be man enough to get out of it. You call her up, you meet with her, and you seal the deal. And guys, listen, if you break up with a girl, that's okay, but you let her go. You let her go and you let her heal. Don't text her randomly and say, hey, what's up? I'm just seeing what's going on. Don't text her and be like, hey, I saw this and it made me think of you. Don't call her up and say, hey, you want to go hang out? You want to go get something to eat? And definitely, in a moment of loneliness or nostalgia, don't call her up and then go hook up with her. Because you know what you do in that moment? You begin to communicate two things, two different things at the same time. I like you, but I don't like you. I don't want to date you, but I want to act like I'm dating you. It breeds insecurity. It breeds insecurity. Look at how the girl responds in verse 3. She says, as an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. She's returning the favor. He's promoted security in her, so she responds and she says, you're the same way. If I'm walking through a forest, you're like an apple tree in the middle of a forest. You're one of a kind. Girls, I'm calling the men tonight to step up. And if they do, you better be strongly in favor of them. You better affirm them in what they're doing. They need to feel secure too in how you feel about them, so you help them out. You see this, guys? This is a guy and a girl where there's no drama in the relationship fueled by insecurities. This is a relationship that's founded upon clarity and confidence and peace. There's tons of different ways that I can go with this right now, but I just want to go one way right now, and I'm going to say something that many of you guys aren't going to agree with, but it is true. You want to have a relationship that's founded upon clarity and confidence and peace? And when you date a guy or you date a girl, then all of your relationships with other people of the opposite sex have to change. They have to. Guys, you start dating a girl, then all of your other relationships with other girls, they have to change. You have to scale them back. Girls, you start dating a guy, all of your, I don't care how good of friends you guys are, how long you've known each other, all your other relationships with people of the opposite sex have to change. Why? Because you want to promote security. You don't want to ever cause the other person to question whether you truly like them or not. Your goal is confidence, clarity, and peace. You want them to know you're the man, you're the woman that I want to give my time and attention and affection toward. It means you don't go have lunch anymore one-on-one with someone who's not your boyfriend. It means you don't sit there and text for long periods of time with a girl who's not your girlfriend. I promise you, when you get married, and my wife and I, you know what? I had several friends that were girls before I started dating Catherine. I don't keep up with any of them now. Why? Because I don't need them. I mean, I appreciate the time that I had a friendship with them, but there is one woman in my life, and it's Catherine. That's it. You know what that also means? It means that if you're single and you have a friend of the opposite sex who gets into a relationship, you need to respect their boyfriend or girlfriend. You don't call their boyfriend or their girlfriend to go hang out. You don't sit there and text them. Why? Is it out of respect? If a guy calls my wife and asks her to go hang out, or he wants to sit there and catch up with her on the phone, I will take the phone and say, stay away from my wife. You can ask me, do you have trust issues? I absolutely do. I trust my wife 100%. I don't trust a guy for a lick if he's willing to call a married woman to hang out. I absolutely have trust issues with that. Relationships have to change. They just do. Why? To promote security. We're almost done. Let me just read through a couple things real quick. It says this, verse 4, he brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me is love. You know what she's saying? She's saying, he took me to a house of wine. It's like he took me to a pub, and he was proud to be with me. He held the door open for me. He stood up when I went to go to the ladies' room. You know what? He introduced me to his guy friends. He's proud of me. His banner over me, he's flying the flag that says, I'm in love with this woman. He's proud of me. She says this in verse 5 and 6. This is funny. I wish I had time to explain it to you. The woman speaks. She says, "Sustain me with raisins. Refresh me with apples, for I am sick with love. His left hand is under my head. His right hand embraces me." Here's what she's saying. She's looking at Solomon. She's saying, "I want that." That's what she's saying. That's what's happening. She is looking at him and desiring him because, guys, this is what happens. This is what happens when you promote security in a girl, when you provide compatibility for a girl. This is what happens when you make a girl smell better and look more beautiful, not physically, but emotionally and spiritually. This is what happens when you take her out in public and you're proud of her. She looks at you and she says, "I want to be with that man. I am lovesick for that man." The girl finishes this section. This is what we're going to finish tonight. No better way she could have finished this section. She says this in verse 7. "I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the does of the field, that you not stir up or awaken love until it pleases." What an appropriate thing for her to tell the other girls around her. She's saying this. I know that the tendency is this. When you see other people finding love, the natural thing is for you to want to find love as well. That's natural. When you see other people finding love, the natural thing is for you to want to find love as well. But she's saying love must not be rushed. Don't rush it. I've heard many pastors compare love to a fire, and I really like the illustration, so I'm going to kind of end with it right now. You think about a fire. A fire is something, a good fire is something that takes some time to build. I mean, you got to find the right logs, and they got to be dry, and you got to arrange them in a certain way, and then you got to get kindling. You can't just put a match to the log. I mean, you got to get kindling. You got to get little twigs and leaves, and you got to kind of stuff them in there under the logs, and then you gotta work it. Sometimes you gotta get down, you gotta blow in there to get some air going through there, and you gotta work it, and sometimes it can take hours to get a true, genuine, good fire going. But there's a beautiful thing, man, when you got a raging fire going, it can provide incredible warmth, and so much joy can happen around a fire. Have you ever been around a teenage boy trying to make a fire? What's his best friend? Lighter fluid, right? Because he wants the instant gratification. He doesn't want to take the time to work it. He doesn't want to take the time to go out and find the right logs. He doesn't want to take the time to find the kindling. What he wants to do is he sprays the logs with lighter fluid, and he lights the match, and the lighter fluid flares up, and then it burns off, and there's no fire. See, a lot of us are dying to find love. But we're trying to find love with lighter fluid instead of a true fire. So here's what we do. We compromise with our physical standards, and we spray our lives with the lighter fluid of physical compromise, and there's a flare-up of what seems to be love, and we enjoy it, and it feels like love in the moment, and then it dies down. Or we'll rush into the wrong relationship and we'll settle for the wrong guys or the wrong girls. We'll spray our lives with compromise by dating the wrong people, and it will cause this flare-up that appears to be love, and then it just dies down. Or we'll spray our lives with just more compromise to say, "You know what, I love you," to the wrong person. We'll drop the L-bomb in the first month or 2 months or 3 months. Why? Because it smells of love. It rages up with love, but then it dies down. Why? Because it's not a real fire. It's not true love. You want to find love, it will take time. It will take time to find someone you're truly compatible with. It will take time to find someone who truly smells of Jesus. It will take time to find a man who doesn't reek of compromise, but reeks of conviction. It'll take time to find someone who's going to make your life smell better today than it did yesterday. It's going to take time for you to develop a relationship that breeds security. It takes time, but I promise you it's worth the wait if you're willing. I asked this question at the beginning, and I'll ask it here at the end. How are you going to date from this day forward? In the next relationship you're in, whether it ends in a breakup or it ends in an engagement, will you be looking back upon that relationship saying, I'm glad we dated like that? Or will you be saying, what was I thinking? How are you going to date from this day forward? Let's pray together. I'm going to ask the band to just play instrumentally tonight as we leave. They'll lead us in a chorus or something like that. But let me just say this. Some of you guys just need to be reminded of what I said at the beginning. Some of you guys are not proud of how you've dated in the past and you've rushed love and you're looking back saying, I can't believe I did that. What was I thinking? You need to know what I said is true. You don't have to carry that guilt or shame 1 minute longer, because the cross was enough for you. What Jesus Christ accomplished through his death, burial, and resurrection, he paid the highest price so that you could experience complete forgiveness today. That's what happens when the God of the universe steps out of heaven and into earth to deal with all of our insecurities, all of our insufficiencies, and all of our failures. He takes all of our failures and deals perfectly with them. His perfection is credited to us. So when the God of the universe sees us, he doesn't see all of the junk we've done. No, what he sees is he sees the blood of his son. Some of you guys just need to own that tonight and say, I can't change who I've been, but I don't have to. Jesus Christ can redeem my past and he can transform my future. Who are you going to be moving forward? You to take some time to do business with the Lord. If you need to slip out, you can. I'm going to ask the band to play, just lead us in a chorus, and then I'm going to come up. I need to give you a few announcements, but before I do that, I want us to just take some time to do business with the Lord. So Lord Jesus, we love you. We give you this time. We ask you to move and work in our hearts right now. In Jesus' name.